Good morning, Council. Please take your time to settle in. No hurry. I will ask the marshal to call the third matter on today's calendar and note for the record that Judge Harris has now rejoined the panel. It's been reconstituted. Go ahead, Marshal.
Calling A241596, Matthew Stephen Krebs, petitioner appellant versus Nicole Lynn Carlson, respondent.
All right, and Council, before you begin your remarks, although feel free to go ahead and get situated at the podium, raise it, lower it, adjust your microphone. I just want to remind you of a couple of things. First of all, we welcome you to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Look forward to hearing your argument. Keep your eye on the clock. You are the only attorney arguing today, but, you know, so 15 minutes, it tends to go quickly. We very much enjoy hearing from you. Before you start your remarks, though, please just to keep our record really clear because we maintain an audio recording and it's later put on our website, would you identify yourself as well as the client you represent? So with that, Council, you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, Attorney Carrie Doom, here on behalf of the appellant in this matter, Matthew Krebs, the father of the two minor children that are the subject of this custody action. This matter is before this court today following the district court's denial of my client's request to modify custody. Appellate courts, as you know, review an order on a custody modification under the abuse of discretion standard. And a district court abuses its discretion by making findings of fact that are unsupported by the evidence, misapplying the law, or delivering a decision that is against logic and facts on the record. The district court's findings of facts are clearly erroneous if the appellate court is left with the definite and firm conviction that a mistake has been made. It is our position here today that the district court abused its discretion when it denied my client's request to modify custody in this matter. In a custody action and in a modification of custody action, the children's best interests are really the paramount commitment. And the guiding principle in all of these cases is the children's best interest. Now, what stands out in this case, and I understand and recognize that it's hard to kind of rebalance or for the court's role to really rebalance the district court's weighing of the best interest factors. I recognize that. But I think what we have here is such a clear abuse of discretion in the weighing of those factors that I think it's appropriate in this case to find that there was an abuse of discretion. And the reason I say that is what we have in this case is we have a finding by the district court that says that mom is endangering the emotional health and welfare of the children. And that endangerment is really going specifically to the children's relationship with their father, to the point that the children no longer have a relationship with their father. We have a custody order stating this is the parenting time, and the parenting time is not occurring. And this is not just a one-time thing. This is a repeated pattern that has gone on throughout since the custody was established in 2020. The court says this is emotional harm to the children.
The court also noted that there was a change in circumstances.
Correct.
Right? And
yes.
It just specifically discussed the issue you're talking about.
Exactly.
So
yes.
I guess you're going to get to it, I know.
Yeah.
My question is, what you're arguing are all facts that the district court considered. And as you noted, put into this, you know, multi-factor analysis. I mean, we have the four prongs that must be proven, and then we have the 12 best interest factors. So, you know, where's the abuse of discretion, Counsel? I can see where the case could have turned out differently.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But as you said, that's not our job. I mean, I can see it, but that's not what appellate courts do.
And I think where the clear abuse of discretion comes here is that the district court's opinion really prioritizes the children's relationship with mom at the expense of having any relationship with dad. And what the statute tells us is that the court must consider that it is in the child's best interest to promote the child's healthy growth and development through safe, stable, nurturing relationship between a child and both parents.
And I don't necessarily, I mean, I agree with you that that is important. And I think that, you know, as you've discussed, the district court here very aptly said, mother's you know, withholding of the children and poisoning the well or whatever you want to call it was in effect endangering these children. And, you know, they're not able to have the relationship that they need to have with their father. I guess I just, I understand it's hard for me to see abuse of discretion in the sense that the relief you were requesting would have so dramatically changed the children's day-to-day lives, right? I think what your client wanted was to completely change so that he has sole legal and physical custody and that mother have one supervised parenting time per week. I mean, that, to the extent that that addresses father's need to have time with the children, but it is such a dramatic change for the children themselves. I mean, why should we conclude that the district court's recognition of that fact constitutes abuse of discretion?
Well, I think one of the things is that the change, particularly as it relates to parenting time and the children's kind of daily lives and what that means, they didn't have to be a permanent change, right? What father testified to is that that's where we need to start. The parties need to go back and re-engaging with their parenting consultant. And once mom can demonstrate that she can support and encourage this relationship, once mom can demonstrate that she can separate her own feelings towards dad and experiences from dad, there was a path forward to being back within these relationships, and it didn't have to be permanent. And I also think that the court, if the court felt like that relief was too drastic, it could have done something else as well. But rather, what the court did was say, yep, mom, you're harming these children. Kids aren't having a relationship with dad, and we're going to say that that's okay. Because it's going to...
I don't see the district court saying just that's okay. I really struggle with that part of your argument, counsel. It seems to me that the district court very much focused on the children's relationship with parents instead of whether father's relationship was benefited more, father's view of his relationship with the children, or mother's view of her relationship with the children. Instead, that what the district court was trying to do was look at the children's relationship with both parents, and it refused. If you don't mind, I just want to share this view, and then you can respond to it and tell me how I'm wrong. The district court was concerned about damaging the children's relationship with their mother, but not solely mother, also all of the other relationships that were in place, including neighbors, cousins, and this grandmother who apparently they saw on a daily basis. By changing the residence and changing the sole legal and physical custody, this would have a major disruption in the children's relationships with all of these people. So I don't see it as this single test that you posit at the beginning. So help me understand where I'm missing the point.
Well, I think, first of all, the court, again, with respect to some of those other relationships, right, with the neighbors, with the extended family, father testified that he would continue to support those relationships. The kids can continue to see their neighbors. These are families within the same community. This isn't a situation where the child's going to be uprooted and moved an hour away and not have these relationships. And dad testified, and there was no evidence to the contrary to suggest that dad would not support those relationships. And again, I agree that it's a significant change for these children, but we also have to look at the fact that there was that endangerment, and while the kids have a relationship with their mom, is that really a healthy relationship? And I think that's really a part that the court dismisses in making its decision. This is a case where mother has repeatedly been working with professionals who have indicated that she cannot move beyond her own feelings. She is resistant. She can't engage, she's argumentative, and then we have to look at what does that do to these children? These children have experienced throughout their life significant, abrupt.
So you seem to be very carefully avoiding saying why mother is traumatized. This is a case, and the district court discussed it, in which there was domestic abuse in the relationship between father and mother. And, of course, the district, that's a complicated thing, right, in a scenario like this. And the district court took some time at discussing those factors and considering, again, a lot of evidence about that, how parenting time had gone, what the psychologists were saying, what the therapists were saying. I mean, there is a lot of information in the district court's finding, and a full evidentiary hearing was conducted. So having said that, to oversimplify it and simply say, well, mother's not supporting father's relationship, isn't really fair to the record in this case, because it's more complicated than that.
Well, I think I want to go to that point of domestic abuse, because I think it's important to look at the court's findings about that. And what the court says, the fourth factor favors denying modification, although its weight is slight. And talked about petitioner verbally, what the evidence showed was that petitioner verbally abused respondent during the relationship, though that relation ended many years ago.
Right, and the district court went on to very carefully in factor four indicate that it did not credit any of the sexual abuse allegations. So the district court was pretty meticulous in terms of assessing the various types of both alleged abuse as well as actual abuse.
Correct, and again, the sexual abuse, I want to make clear, was sexual abuse allegations against the children, not against mom.
Right.
I just wanted to make sure that was clear. And again, that I think the important piece here, though, is that, and I'm the court again, the, going back to your point about mom not supporting that relationship, and you know, with that being the domestic abuse, with the domestic abuse present there, again, the court gave that little weight, and again, didn't give weight to the fact that there's multiple professionals working with these families who are just not seeing these same concerns that mom has noted. Two different reunification therapists, psychological evaluators, child protection.
Are you saying that the therapists are not seeing the sexual abuse allegations as being verified or credited?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that's clearly in the record, counsel.
Right.
But the therapists and the psychologists and other, you know, the other professionals that assisted and the district court recognized, you know, that mother had limitations due to her own past experiences and perhaps mental health limitations in her ability to support father's relationship with the children, but the district court went on to say that mother had consistently followed court orders, had allowed phone calls, had supported exchanges throughout, except, you know, when a court order authorized or child protection incident authored otherwise.
And I think to a certain extent, I mean, at the time of the trial, there had been 3 months where the mom wasn't supporting the order. The kids weren't going. So I find that finding by the court to be concerning in the sense that the court said, well, there's parenting time isn't happening, but there's phone contact and the kids are getting to play video games with dad, as if that's some substitute for the parenting time. And so I
thought the district court reflected that at least one of the two sons had resumed some visits in that January to what, March time frame, something like that.
So both of the kids had resumed, then there was a slow stop again.
In any event, I don't see where your brief says that there's clear error in that part of the findings. Did I miss that?
I don't believe that it was probably in there in that part of the findings, but I think in response question about saying that, you know, here you've got a mom who's following the orders every step of the way, I would say that the record shows differently, that that's not the situation. And my brief does point out the fact that he made that finding when at the time of we'd just gone through the reunification therapy process. We had just done what needed to happen to get back to that relationship. And my brief does point out that within a very short period of time, we are right back to the kids not going to parenting time.
So, counsel, it seems to me what we have here is we have a court order where the district court addresses all 12 factors, provides a factual basis as it relates to each factor, indicates whether or not the factor weighs in favor of modification or against modification, and then comes to a conclusion in, quite frankly, a very complicated family dynamic. Isn't that exactly what the district court's supposed to do here, in that it seems to me that you're asking this court to reweigh the evidence, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems our case law says it's not our role to reweigh the evidence, and why would we do that, given that it seems to me that while there is clearly some of the factors that you disagree with, the court, in fact, addressed the factor, provided a factual basis for the factor. That factual basis is supported by the record. I'm trying to understand where exactly is there an abuse of discretion when that is what occurred here.
And again, I think my point in this regard is that it's our position that the abuse of discretion occurred because the court doesn't, in its balancing of the factors, from our perspective, that the court said, yes, mom is endangering these children. She's endangering that relationship with dad. And then says, we're going to keep continuing to move forward with essentially that continued pattern happening. And
I think, counsel, wouldn't you agree, yes, the court said mom was endangering the children and that was a factor that weighed in favor, in essence, of modification. But again, the court did not use that factor to the exclusion of all other factors. Didn't the court, in fact, then indicated that even though mom is engaging in this behavior that is endangering the children, the removal of the children from mom to dad would create a significant disruption in the children's lives. And given that balancing act, the court determined that it didn't weigh enough in favor to remove the children. Again, isn't that exactly the type of discretion that this court should give the district court to make, given that they are in the best place to weigh the credibility, listen to the facts, and make the determination?
I see that I'm out of time. May I briefly respond?
Ahead, counsel, please.
Again, and I think where this really, I recognize that they made the weighing of the factors and that there was this going to be a significant change to the children's lives. But the court, what I see is really problematic in this situation is that significant change did not have to be permanent in that there was a path forward, parenting consultant that the parties could work with. The court could have set a different transition schedule. The court could have set any different parenting time schedule it wanted than what was requested. And I think where the abuse of discretion really comes in this case is the court finds this emotional harm, this damage to that relationship, and in essence does nothing about it. And I think that's where the problem lies. And with that, I see that my time has ran out. So if there's no further questions.
I don't see any questions from the panel, and I want to thank you, counsel, for your presentation. The matter was very well presented to the court. It is now submitted to us for our decision. We will issue a decision within the statutory timeline. Thank you again. So with that, we have completed the three matters on our oral argument calendar, and we will be in recess for our non-oral cases.
All rise.